Okay, here we are meeting again after Shavuos. Zman Matan Torasenu. It's one to mention before we begin the shiur this evening. Next week there will be no shiur. This coming Sunday, God willing, we're making a chasana. My son Yitzhak Yoel, named for the original Yitzhak Yoel, who some of you may know or have heard or heard of. And that will be Sunday. So Monday night will either be Sheva Brachos or whatever is the process of becoming someone else's father-in-law. That probably requires its own corridor of time. So we'll pick up again, Mirz Hashem, in 2 weeks' time. But in the meanwhile, for next Monday, we will indulge in Mevatlin Talmud Torah Lechnosas Kala. So we have the Parsha of Ba'alosecha, that is to say, there's been a bit of a, halachic or minhagic jet lag, we would say, but here we are in Eretz Yisrael, already moving on to Parshas Ba'alosecha. So let us pursue that parsha. I believe it won't be as long as usual for the two locations to unite. It will be Chukas and Balak, which is not too long away. But in the meanwhile, we proceed. The beginning of Parshas Ba'alosecha is the mitzvah of the menorah. This is the third, and perhaps in some respects fourth, iteration of the menorah in the Torah. We've had it actually twice in Chumash Shemos, in Truma and Tetzaveh. We have it in Parshas Emor in Vayikra, and we have as well here in the beginning of Ba'alosecha. And Rashi, as we know, the well-known Rashi, comments on the juxtaposition, the smichus parshios, between the mitzvah of the menorah and the end of Parshas Noso, which is, of course, the very extensive description of the korbanos that the Nesiim brought at the time of the inauguration of the Mishkan. So we have 89 psukim of korbanos and Nesiim, and that leads into Aaron and the menorah. Rashi raises the question, Lama nismecha parshas ha-menorah, le parshas ha-nesiim? What's the menorah got to do with the nesiim? Lefi, because, shekashera Aaron chanukas ha-nesiim, when Aaron sees the inaugural offerings of the nesiim, in those first 12 days, chol sha'oz dato, he became somewhat despondent. Shelohaya imahim b'chanukah, he was not also with them in the Chanukah. And that itself is a question discussed by the Mefarshim. Why was he not with them in the Chanukah? Who is to decide who volunteers? I mean, all of this was done, at least initially, on a voluntary basis. They stepped forward, but either way, he was not involved, not him, velo shivto, and not his tribe. Amala Kadosh Baruch Hu, chayecha, by your life, shelcha gedola mishelahem, your portion is greater than theirs. Sha'ata madlik umeitiv es hanerus, because you will have the special mitzvah of the lights of the menorah. So to summarize, again, as we say, we know the Rashi quite well, but Rashi is saying the connection is that Aaron sees the Chanukah Sanasiyim, and he's not involved, and he becomes a despondent, and Hashem comforts him. The menorah is greater than, your lot is greater than their lot, with the lighting of the menorah. And Ramban discusses exactly what this medrash means to say. On a straightforward level, of course, the reference is to lighting of the menorah in the Mishkan. I mean, that's, in context really, that's what we're talking about. That's the Neros. The problem is, says Ramban, it's hard to understand how that would be a comfort for Aaron, in the sense that there's so many other things that he is doing in the Mishkan as well. He offers the Ketores and he offers the Korbanos at the very same time that the Nesiim were bringing their special Korbanos. He's already bringing Korbanos and doing so many other things as well. Of all of those things, why should the menorah be singled out? Which is a very elemental question. And based on this, says Ramban, if you wish to understand the intent of the Medrash, when the Medrash says that Hashem comforts and encourages Aaron with the lighting of the menorah, the reference is not to the lighting of the menorah in the Mishkan. For that, as we say, is one of a number of things that Aaron does in the Mishkan. Why should this be singled out? Rather, the reference is to a subsequent or a later Chanukah, a later inauguration, which takes place at the time of the Chashmonaim, when they rededicate the Beis HaMikdash through the menorah, and that is exclusive and unique to them. So this now is the comfort for the Ramban of Hashem to Aaron. You're not involved in this Chanukah, but you're involved in a subsequent Chanukah, and the Ramban adduces further support for this idea that the Chanukah, the menorah that Hashem comforts Aaron with, is the later menorah of Chanukah. How so? He cites a Midrash Tanchuma, which also discusses this idea. And the way the Tanchuma expresses the comfort for Aaron is Hashem said to Aaron, the korbanos, which the Nasiim are bringing, there's only korbanos as long as there's a Mishkan. But there will always be the lights of the menorah. Aval haneiros le'olam el mul p'nei ha-menorah yo'iru. So the comfort as expressed by the Medrash is, this is only exists when the Mishkan exists, or when the Beis HaMikdash exists. But the menorah exists always. Says Ramban, the menorah also only exists when the Beis HaMikdash exists, Mishkan or Beis HaMikdash. So what does the Medrash Tanchuma mean when it says that the menorah will continue to exist? As Ramban, that confirms what we're suggesting, that the intent of the Medrash is actually to the menorah of Chanukah, which then continues in the form of the lighting of the menorah every Chanukah since, even if there is no Beis HaMikdash. So these are the famous two approaches of Rashi on the one hand, Ramban on the other. And we may say it is fair to point out that notwithstanding the Ramban's questions on Rashi, Rashi seems to be the simple understanding of the Medrash, because the Pasuk of Balos Chasaneiros is talking about the menorah in the Mishkan. And according to Rashi, the comfort for Aaron is the menorah in the Mishkan. For the Ramban, the menorah to which Hashem refers is far and away from the Mishkan. Perhaps initially it's the Beis HaMikdash, and subsequently it's near Chanukah, all over the place. It seems to be somewhat removed, which may well be. And if it's a Medrash, so it's HaDerech HaDrash. And that's how things remain. Until along comes Reb Leib Mintzberg in the Ben Melech, and he explains that these two approaches of Rashi and Ramban are not as at odds with each other as we might think. They're not as exclusive to each other. For in fact, one is an expansion of the other. And this, of course, is one of the bedrock ideas of the Ben Melech, that if you ever find a pshat idea and a drash idea, the drash is not the pshat, but it is often an expansion of the pshat. It's an emanation from the pshat. And what does this mean for us in our situation? Let us go back to the beginning. Aaron sees that everyone is involved in the Chanukah. He's not involved, and Hashem consoles him with the menorah. And the question that is raised is, what's the special consolation of the menorah beyond any other korbanos that he's bringing? Says Rav Mintzberg, the special consolation that is brought by lighting the menorah is that there's a message, a concept associated with the menorah that goes beyond what is associated with korbanos. What is the celebration of these inaugural days, of these first 12 days? The Mishkan is here, and a relationship with Hashem, an avoda relationship, has been initiated. And it's a celebration. But the question is, what exactly are we celebrating? Meaning, the fact that this avoda relationship exists, what does that tell us? Korbanos, says Rav Mintzberg, means that there is a connection between the one performing the avoda and the one who is being worshipped. Korbanos tell us there's a connection. How close a connection? We don't know. Meaning, korbanos say that we are here, Hashem might be there, but a connection exists. The menorah says more than that. The menorah, which provides light in the Mishkan, and as many mefarshim, rishonim, each one in their own way, explains that the idea of insisting, the Torah commanding, that there be light in the Mishkan, when do you turn the light on? When there's someone there, in order for someone to be there. In other words, menorah takes the connection between us and Hashem and expresses it in much more immediate terms. If we could put it into one sentence, korbanos indicate that Hashem is there for us. Menorah indicates that Hashem is here for us. Meaning the Shekhinah dwells among B'nai Yisrael, as is expressed by the fact that the light is on in the Mishkan, Hashem is there. In the center of where we are, not far and away that we're somehow connected to. This is the idea of the menorah. And this idea endures. And moreover, as we move now from Rashi, who explained that the consolation was within the menorah of the Mishkan itself, in the way that we've just explained it, its proximity that's expressed. But now we come to the Ramban's idea that the consolation is Chanukah. Quite so. But what is Chanukah, the event of Chanukah, and then the festival of Chanukah, if not ultimately an emanation of what the menorah in the Mishkan represents? As if to say, the menorah in the Mishkan says Hashem dwells amongst the B'nai Yisrael, and therefore they have his close protection. And where is this experience? Where is this evident? Where is it manifest? Well, firstly, in the story of Chanukah, Rabim Biyad Ma'atim and the miracles of the menorah itself, and by extension, every Jewish home that lights a menorah is also now attesting to the presence of the Shekhinah among them who protects the Jewish people wherever they are. And this means that the menorah of Chanukah, it's not the pshat of the pasuk. The pshat of the pasuk is the menorah of the Mishkan. But at the same time, the menorah of Chanukah is an expansion of that idea into the future and outwards into every Jewish home. And this is how Rav Mintzberg makes resolution between Rashi's more pshat-based explanation of the Medrash, so to speak, and the Ramban. Interestingly, and while we're yet on the subject of the menorah, the lighting of the menorah, there is quite a surprising statement in the Gemara. The Gemara states, and this is in Maseches Yuma, Kaftalud Amud Beis, that the lighting of the menorah is not one of the avodas of the Beis HaMikdash. And this seems to be somewhat unusual. After all, when we think of all the things that happen in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, the menorah is prominent among them. And here, says the Gemara, it's not an avoda, not in the formal, full sense of the word. And let us see an expression of that idea. The Rambam has a well-known ruling in Hilchos Bios Mikdash, who states that actually it is acceptable for a non-Kohen to light the menorah. Now, there is a logistical issue here. A non-Kohen could never make it into the Mishkan or in the Beis HaMikdash. But the Rambam is not deterred. Because what that means is that if somehow they remove the menorah, took it out of the Beis HaMikdash to a place where a non-Kohen could go, and he lit the menorah, and then they put it back, it's kosher. Now, there's two chidushim here already. Number one, a non-Kohen can light the menorah, says Rambam, and also the menorah can be lit outside. Actually, according to the Chasam Sofer, as startling as this idea might be, that the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash can be lit outside, this actually is the simple and straightforward meaning of the words that we say in Al Nisim and Chanukah. When they came to the Beis HaMikdash, Pinu es halecha, tirechalecha, tirech mikdashecha, vihidliku neiros bechatzros kachecha. They lit lights in chatzros kachecha. Chatzros kachecha are the courtyards of the Beis HaMikdash. That's not where the menorah resides. But, says the Chasam Sofer, that's where they lit. Perhaps for reasons of Prisumi Nissa, let the lighting of the menorah, let it be outside, visible for all. As we know, publicizing the miracle is such a central part. So how better to publicize the miracle than to take the actual menorah itself, take it outside, and light it? Then, of course, it would need to be brought back inside. But the question is, how are we to relate to this? How can it be that the lighting of the menorah can be performed by a non-Kohen? Isn't it one of the mitzvahs of the Beis HaMikdash? How does it become this blind spot? But that's why Reb Chaim Soloveitchik says that what the Rambam means to say when he says that a non-Kohen can light the menorah is because the lighting of the menorah is not the essence of the mitzvah in the Beis HaMikdash. Rather, it is the illumination provided by the menorah. The result, not the action, is where the mitzvah lies. And what that means is that even if a non-Kohen would light the menorah, a Kohen can now bring it back into to the Mishkan, and with that, the mitzvah is fulfilled. Because the result of illuminating the Mishkan, that's where the mitzvah is. And it's a Kohen that brought it back inside. And the reason why we mention this within the context of our Parsha is because some Mefarshim point out that this idea is alluded to in our opening Pasuk. That is to say, Pasuk Beis of a perikres. Because if we read the pasuk, Daber el Aaron v'amar toilav, ba'aloschas haneiros, when you raise the lights, kindle the lights, el mul panei menorah, ya'iru shivas haneiros. Is there a mitzvah in this pasuk? Is there a command? The words that refer to the lighting of the menorah are the words, ba'aloschas haneiros, when you light the menorah. Those words are not a command. They are descriptive. When you light the menorah. So is there a command in the pasuk? There is. It's in the words that follow. Ya'iru shivas haneiros. Let the seven lights illuminate. And what we see from here is the kindling of the lights is described, but the illumination of the light is proscribed, that is to say, or prescribed. That's where the mitzvah is. But that, as the Mefarshim point out, supports what Reb Chaim Soloveitchik is saying in the opinion of the Rambam, that the mitzvah in the equation is that the illumination be provided. And this actually goes hand in hand with our understanding of the message of the menorah that the king dwells where the lights are on. Someone is there if the lights are on. So it's the presence of the light. It's really the mitzvah. And interestingly, some say that this relates, and this will be about as far into Chanukah as we'll go for this evening, but some say that this relates to the famous question of the Beis Yosef as to why Chanukah is 8 days. As we know, there was enough oil seemingly for one day. That's how the Gemara describes it, in which case you have 7 days worth of miracles. But one day was a natural day. Why is Chanukah then 8 days? And there are somewhere between numerous and innumerable answers that have been given to this question. But the Beis Yosef himself presents three possibilities. Firstly, briefly, to see them, because one of them will be very apropos of our discussion. The first is that they divided the day's worth of oil into eight, and each day they put an eighth in, and the eighth burnt for the whole night. And the upshot of this idea is that actually there was a miracle every night, because every night an eighth of the container burnt for the whole night. The more yekish among the commentators will yet say that, but there is a net day's worth of oil. But either way, there was a miracle experienced on every day by just having an eighth of the natural amount that you needed to burn for the entire night. The second explanation is that when they poured from the jar into the menorah, the jar filled up miraculously, immediately, which means, again, there was a miracle from day one. Here, too, it could be that the blanket has just moved from the last 7 days to the first 7 days. If the jar refills as soon as they pour it in, that means on the eighth day they had a jar's worth of oil that burnt. So the question is, having seen the miracle on day one, perhaps that means there's no miracle on day eight, and how has the question been addressed? These are all the reactions and responses. But the third explanation, which is given by the Beis Yosef, is that they poured everything into the menorah on day one, and the oil lasted for 8 days, as simple as that. And just to elaborate just further on this, the Magen Avraham, who in addition to his work, Magen Avraham, his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, also has a commentary on the Medrash Yalkut Shimoni called Zayis Ra'ana. And the Magen Avraham understands what the Beis Yosef means to say is that they put the oil, they set it alight, they kindled the lights, and that's it. And they left it there. All of Hanukkah. Because the menorah was full until the very last day. So there's nothing else that needs to be done. So they just left it there. Which is interesting, because if that's the case, then when we say that the miracle of the oil is that it lasted 8 times longer than it needed to, it actually lasted 16 times longer than it needed to, because the oil is meant to burn from through the night and then extinguish, be depleted by the day. If this burnt night and day, so then it is 15 or 16 times the amount, not just quote-unquote 8 times, which is the normal understanding of the miracle. Either way, the reason why we bring this discussion in here is because some ask, how can the Magen Avraham say that they, on the first night of Hanukkah, they lit the menorah and they just left it there? There is a mitzvah to light the menorah. If they just left it for 8 days, it sounds like they were neglectful of the mitzvah for the last 7 days of Hanukkah. You light it and leave it. So you're not doing anything for the next 7 days. But that is why some Mefarshim say, based on this, once again, idea of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, in understanding of the Rambam, if the mitzvah of menorah is not the act of lighting, rather, it's the result of illuminating, generally, the oil will only last for the night, which means if you wish that illumination to achieve that result for the next night, you'll need to light the next night. But this was what was different at that time. Since the oil miraculously lasted for 8 days and 8 nights, the illumination, the result has been provided. There's no requirement per se to light. You normally need to light to provide illumination. But if illumination is provided simply because the oil was not depleted and the light was not extinguished, that is a full fulfillment of the mitzvah of providing illumination for 8 days without doing anything after the first day. So these are some of the very interesting discussions bordering on the halachic, but also the parshanut with the medrash, and understanding how the mitzvah of the menorah of the Mishkan works. I'd like to move now a bit further into the Parsha. Balos has so many things in it, it's possible to deal with it, many things, and still leave many things out. But I would like to take a look at Perek Yud Aleph, which is the topic known as Kivur Satava. And that is in Perek Yud Aleph. Of course, the first three psukim are what's called the Misonanim, those who complained. It's not clear what they complained about. They were dealt with very quickly. It's an amazing contrast between these two major catastrophes, the Misonanim and Kivur Satava, whereby the Misonanim starts, happens, and is finished within three psukim, and Kivur Satava just keeps going for many psukim. And that's how we have it. And Pasuk Dalet, which is where Kivur Satava begins. V'asav suf asher b'kirbo, we have this rabble among the Jewish people, his avutava, they had a desire, v'yashuvu v'yivku kam b'nei Yisrael, and then that set also the rest of the Jewish people going, v'yomu mi yachilenu basar, they would like to have meat. That's their question. Even with everything that's been explicated, it's still very mystifying. What is this tava that they have? Why is it they want meat? And also, the expression, the phraseology of the pasuk, his avu tava, is interesting because it doesn't say that they desired meat. It doesn't say his avu basar. It says his avu tava, which literally translates as they desired a desire. But what does it mean to desire a desire? Presumably, if a person has a desire, he desires something. So what exactly is this double-barreled expression of his avu tava? We have the next few psukim describe the man that they were complaining about, and Moshe was very unhappy about all of these complaints. And Moshe says he doesn't know what to do with the people. In Pasuk Tet Zion, seemingly related to this whole situation, what does Hashem say to Moshe? Again, Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Tet Zion, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Esfali, Shivim Ish Mizikne Yisrael, gather for me 70 people from the elders of Israel, Hashir Adata, Kim Zikne Ha'am, etc. And Pasuk Yud Zayin, V'yaradati v'dibarti mechasham, I will speak to you, V'otzalti menaruach, Asher alecha v'samti alehem. And I will then expand and extend the word V'otzalti from the expression Eitzel. I will spill it over to those who are near you. And what is this talking about? The forming of a Sanhedrin. This is the time when it's no longer just Moshe himself judging the people, aside from Yisro's system, but this is the original Sanhedrin Gedola. The 70 elders are appointed here. The question is, what does one thing have to do with the other? We're in the middle of this Kivur Satava crisis, and the people are complaining, and they want meat, and is it good for them, is it not good for them? And then it seems from out of the blue, Hashem says, you need a Sanhedrin to adjudicate. No one is bringing a din Torah to the Sanhedrin at this point. It seems to be completely not apropos of the events as they are unfolding. So how did these two things go together? And there are a number of Mefarshim who explain in a similar vein. We will take Meshe Chachma among them, of course, and he explains as follows. The issue is, what is life like when you eat the man, and what is life like when you eat normal food? Normal food is a product of things that grow organically, and anything that grows, in a sense, has an integral desire to grow. Even plant life, anything that grows, the sun shines, it will move in that direction, and so on. Animals, certainly, they have their desires, and what that means is that natural food breeds desire because a person is ingesting an entity that is made up of components that have desire. The man is very different. It's a spiritual food. It's called lechem abirim. in the Pasuk in Tehillim, Lechem Abirim Achal Ish, which the Gemara in the 7th Perek of Yuma explains either to mean, 8th Perek, pardon me, that it's the Malachim of Abirim, the food of the mighty, i.e. this is the food that angels eat, that Malachim eat. Or Lechem Abirim is explained from the expression of Evarim. It's just absorbed. There's no waste. It's a completely spiritual thing. Now, physical food can breed physical desire and development. Spiritual food breeds spiritual development, not so much physical. Which means the people who are eating man, they find themselves eating food which it's conducive to spiritual advancement, but not so much to the physical way of living that they were used to. And they are bemoaning that. They're missing that. And perhaps not wishing to rise to the challenge of the spiritual growth that's available in the man. They prefer just the general physical pursuits. But they're almost without the wherewithal to pursue it. Because the man doesn't breed physical desire. But that's what they miss. And that's why the way this is referred to is with the words hisavu ta'ava. What they desired is desire, because they don't have it, but they miss it. So hisavu ta'ava, and they say, mi yachilenu basar, if only we would have meat, then we would get ta'ava back. And that's what we're used to. Now, Moshe responds very harshly and complains actually to Hashem in Pasuk Yud Aleph, just to read these psukim. Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, lama hariosa lavdecha. Why have you done evil, bad to your servant? Velama lomatzasichem enecha. Haven't found favor in your eyes. Favor in your eyes. Pasuk Yud Beis, hanochi arisias amaze. Me'ayin li basar. Where do I have food from to give them? That they say, give us food, which is a very interesting question. After all, where does Moshe have anything? He gets it from Hashem, and he gives it to the Jewish people. It sounds like this is an impossible request, but we've seen more miraculous than this. And Moshe goes further. He says, I can't bear this people anymore, bear them alone, that is to say. And Pasuk Tezvav reaches the apex of just how profoundly affected Moshe is by this request. V'imkacha at osali hargeni naharok. Kill me now. Imotzasichem beinecha. I don't want to see what's going to happen. It's very, very drastic response. But why is it so? The man comes to the Jewish people through the conduit of Moshe. And if we wish to understand how the Jewish people were able to partake of such a spiritual food, Lechem Abirim, the food of Malachi Ashares, it's because the one who was the conduit for this food to come to them is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, Isha Elohim, he is the most spiritual. He himself is practically as close to a Malach as one can get. And therefore, because it is through his agency, in his schutz, I guess we say, he's the conduit for which to receive it, the food that they eat is on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why Moshe says he hears them asking for lesser food, but he can't give it to them. Or more correctly, he can't give it to them without himself falling from his lofty madrega. At the madrega of Moshe Rabbeinu, in such a spiritual way, man is going to come down. If they want meat, which is much lower, Moshe is going to have to be lower in order to be the conduit for such a physical food. Says Moshe, I can't do that unless I just abdicate on my spiritual madriga. So that he says to Hashem, so then take me now and find someone else. So now the question is there any way that Moshe can remain, so to speak, on his lofty madriga? But the Jewish people will still receive their meat. How does it work? The answer, says Meshech Chochma, is in Pasuk Tetzayin, where Hashem says, Isvali Shivim Shivimish. What's happening now is that there are 70 people. The leadership is not directly from Moshe to the people, which means that they receive on his level, but rather there's a further attachment. There's a group around Moshe of these 70 men. Now, these 70 men, of course, are all very worthy, very righteous, very wise, fully qualified to be members of the Sanhedrin, but they're not Moshe Rabbeinu. But now that Hashem's spirit spills over, so to speak, from Hashem to Moshe, they act as a kind of another step in the naturalization of that divine flow as it comes down, so that when the food is brought in this extended and expanded merit, there will be a more physical type of food. And that is how Meshech Chochmah explains. It's a fascinating concept, how it is that the appointment of these 70 men acts in response to this whole Kivros HaTava situation. The more we understand the root of the problem, the more we see how this could be a solution. This is the first explanation offered by Meshech Chochmah, but he goes on and provides another way of understanding, again, just to review our question as it is, how is the appointing of these 70 men a response to miyachilenu basar, and they don't like the man? Says Meshech Chochmah, the man promotes spiritual pursuits. The Jewish people at this time have just been barred from a significant spiritual pursuit, which is called the Avodah in the Mishkan. What is Bamidbar and also the beginning of Balosacha? What are they about, if not the fact that Avodah has been localized now with the Kohanim and around them the Levim, and that's it. And if you're from one of the other tribes, so then you're not involved in the Avodah in any way. And in the wake of this, and that's really, again, as you say, the opening sections among them of Parshas Balosha are about the replacement of everyone with Levim. So if you're not a Levi, so they get to thinking, so why am I eating man? I'm out of the running. It's meant to be developing me spiritually, but I'm barred from the Avodah. So is there any purpose in still me eating the man? And the answer is yes. And it comes in the form of the appointment of the Shivim Zakenim. Because the Shivim Zakenim represent the one area of Torah from which no one is barred, and it makes no difference where you come from, and that's Torah. Here you have Shivim Ish Mizikne Yisrael. They're not Kohanim. They're not Levim. But they've developed themselves, and they are now proficient to occupy special status within the world of Torah. That's for everyone, and that is part of the response as to eating the man. If you're wondering, is there any scope for my spiritual development outside of the Avodah? The answer is yes, Torah. Mindful of something I heard in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, I mentioned perhaps a few months ago, that when the Gabbai calls the Kohen to the Torah, and Yamod, so-and-so, ben so-and-so, a Kohen, Borosha Nosan Tolam Ezok B'Shasso, and then everyone says, V'atem Advekim Hashem Elokechem Chayim Kuchem Hayom. You cleave to Hashem, you are alive today. That's the conclusion of calling the Kohen up to the Torah. What's it got to do with the Kohen? And Shlomo Zalman explained that here's in our own experience where the Kohen takes pride of place. He makes the bracha first, and there's something special about the Kohen, and there is something special about the Kohen. But people shouldn't think, so I guess the moral of the story is, if I'm not a Kohen, so then why am I even here? And Shlishi has lost its appeal at that stage. And to that, the Gabbai balances the calling up of the Kohen. There are certain areas where it's only the Kohen. But he turns to the rest of the Kahal and says, "Vatem advekim Hashem elokeichem." You're all part of Torah. You can all be Tamei Chachamim. You can all be Torah learners and Torah proficient and so on. Chayim kochem hayom. That's the counter message, so to speak, from bringing up the Kohen. And this is what was also indicated by appointing a Sanhedrin. Not everyone can serve in the Mishkan, however hard they try. But anyone can become a member of the Sanhedrin if they just try hard enough. So these are some classic comments from the Meshech Chochma, from that school of thought with regards to the Kivros HaTava. I'd like to conclude by taking us back to the beginning of the Parsha, to the mitzvah of the menorah. Because actually, we focused on one section of the mitzvah, one branch, dare I say it, of the mitzvah of the menorah, and that is hadlaka, the kindling. But there is another aspect to the mitzvah, and that's called hatovas haneros. Hatovas haneros takes place the next morning, when the oil is burnt out and you have the wick has been used, it's been charred, so everything is cleared out and everything is prepared for the next night's lighting. New oil is put in, fresh wicks are put in. That's called hatovas haneros, making good. The neros, getting them ready. Interestingly, as much as the Gemara says that lighting the menorah is not an avoda, and the Rambam tells us that in principle, the menorah can be lit by someone who's not even a Kohen, hatovas haneros, getting the neros ready, is an avoda, and can only be done by a Kohen, which is very interesting. And there is a medrash, somewhat mystifying medrash in Vayikra Rabbah, when we're told about the Aseres HaDibros in Chumash Devarim, and Hashem says that, or Moshe relates, you heard the first two Dibros, you heard Hashem speak, and you came to me, and you said, we can't bear it, we can't take it, we'll just expire if this continues to happen. And I relayed that to Hashem, and Hashem said, I've heard what the Jewish people are saying. They don't feel that they can withstand hearing directly from me anymore. Heitivu asher diberu. They've spoken well. Heitivu asher diberu. And the Medrash asks an interesting question. Heitivu asher diberu, they've spoken well. How well? Says the Medrash, kahatovas haneros. That's how well. Like getting the neighbors ready. It makes an association between the words heitivu and what is referred to by the Kohen, beheitivo es haneros. Heitivu, heitivu, that's how good. And I think the Medrash wouldn't have asked the question if he didn't have the answer. Heitivu how? Katovas haneros. But what does this mean? And it's especially apropos following just a few days after Shavuos, Zman Matan Toroseinu. Rav Utmer points out that if you take a look at the Kriyas HaTorah for Shavuos morning, which is from Shemos Perek Yutes and Kaf, Matan Torah, there is as much, it's fair to say, there is as much, if not more, description of what Matan Torah was like as what was said there. The psukim of Aseres HaDibros themselves are, it's more than 10 psukim, but not many more than 10 psukim. But beyond that, you have extensive descriptions of the thunder and the lightning and the fire and the smoke and the mountain is quaking and the people are shaking, and I think equal, if not more. And what does this tell us? It tells us that the atmosphere at Har Sinai was an equal partner in the experience of receiving the Torah than the contents of what was said there. Because if you have the Torah and the people aren't fully ready, absolutely, to receive it in the way that it's meant to be received, so that's not called Matan Torah. That's not called giving the Torah or receiving the Torah. And therefore, every bolt of lightning and every clap of thunder and all of those things, it's part of the Torah experience, because it allows the people to ready themselves. They are now about to hear something which is clear to them of absolute, ultimate import. That's part of Matan Torah as well. And what the Rav Hutner is saying is that when a person learns Torah, a person's relationship with Torah is as important, and perhaps even more so, than the words of Torah that they learn. And this is something which is described by the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, in the Sefer Derech Hashem, and he states that the great sanctity that exists within the words of Torah, how much does a person receive from that? It depends entirely on a person's relationship with Torah. If a person has high regard and due reverence for the words of Torah, the Kedusha will be released more. Otherwise, it will be released less, perhaps even not at all. The Ramchal hesitates before saying nothing. If a person has zero regard in the way that he described it, he reads Torah like he would read a letter, or like we would read the news. And this really echoes the idea of, or pre-echoes the idea of Rav Hutner, that a person's regard for Torah is crucial in terms of what we call receiving the Torah. And indeed, this is an idea that is also amplified by Rav Kook Zatzal in his Chiddush Agados, Maseches Brachos, Einaya. There, the Gemara says, it makes a statement, I think it's quite well known, Gedola Shimusha Shel Torah, Yoser Milimuda. The attending, serving Torah, attending to a Torah personality or person is greater than learning Torah. And of course, this question is is most baffling. this statement. Where is it derived from, by the way? The Gemara derives it from Elisha. The Navi Elisha is introduced in the Navi, in the Psukim, by saying, Po Elisha ben Shafat, here is Elisha, Asher Yatzak Mayim Ayidei Eliyahu. He poured water over Eliyahu's hands. That's Eliyahu HaNavi. Says the Gemara, he had more in interaction with Eliyahu HaNavi than just washing his hands. I mean, Eliyahu HaNavi taught him Torah. He taught him how to be a Navi. Is that not more significant? If you only mention one thing, it's this. This is his outstanding lifetime achievement for which he will be remembered. He washed Eliyahu's hands. Nothing else. Not the Torah he learned from him, says the Gemara. No. Exactly. Because washing Eliyahu's hands is shimusha shel Torah. It's attending Torah. And attending to Torah is greater than learning Torah. That's what we see from there. But of course, the question is, how can it be? After all, why would a person attend to a Torah sage? Because they're a very great person. What's great about them? They learn Torah. So you learn Torah and make yourself great. Why is it better to just attend to them who is great? Why are you in the stands where you could be on the field yourself becoming a Torah person? It's a very challenging statement of the Gemara, and many Pirushim have been given. But Rav Kook explains it kipshuto. Attending Torah really can be greater than learning Torah. Within measure, of course, every statement in Agadah, which is stated as an absolute, needs to be put into context within the framework. But within a framework, sometimes attending to Torah can be greater than learning Torah. But why is it so? Says Rav Kook, for exactly the reason that we have been discussing. After all, in order for Torah to affect a person, he needs two things. And it will be a product of those two elements. Number one, the Divrei Torah themselves. But number two, his relationship with them. The higher his regard, the greater the impact. It's not just a product of how much he knows, but how much he values words of Torah. Therefore, if we could envisage, even just for illustrative purposes, that a person knows 1,000 words of Torah or 1,000 Torah ideas, and now he has 10 minutes where he could invest in idea number 1,001. but his relationship with Torah is at level one. He could do something with these 10 minutes that will increase his Torah relationship to level two, thereby doubling everything. Sometimes that's worth it. It's a better use of time. Because how does a person develop a value? How does a person promote and increase a value? By expressing that value. That's the amazing synergy or symbiosis between values. When you express it, you absorb it. If you act on it, it becomes more part of you. And therefore, by serving a Torah person, shimusha shel Torah, by washing Eliyahu's hands, what is he expressing? That this is a significant person because they learned Torah. And when he expresses it, he absorbs it, and now all of his Torah changes. And the net impact of his Torah knowledge on him increases by so many increments. And that, says Rav Kook, is why sometimes shimusha shel Torah Gedola milimuda. And this is something that receives graphic expression. We didn't talk about it the week before Shavuos, but we've spoken about it in the past. The way that the festival of Shavuos is introduced by the Torah in Parshas Emor, every Yom Tov is called a Mikra Kodesh, a holy calling, or as they used to call it when I was growing up, a holy convocation, which means Mikra Kodesh. And that's every Yom Tov. Comes on Shavuos, and the Torah says, "Ukarasem be'etzem ayom hazeh, mikra kodesh yelachem." That's in Vayikra, Perek Kav Gimel, Pasuk Yotes. Be'etzem ayom hazeh. On this very day, it sounds like it's emphasizing something, but every day is that very day. The first of Tishrei is just called the first of Tishrei. The first of the seventh month is not called be'etzem ayom hazeh, and so on. The only other case is Yom Kippur for various, very specific reasons, but every other Yom Tov is just say the day, and that's that very day. It doesn't need to be emphasized. So why is it emphasized? The Magen Avraham, famously in the Magen Avraham on the Shulchan Aruch, raises the question. We say that Shavuos is Man Matan Torasenu, the time of the giving of the Torah. We say that on the 6th of Sivan. According to Rabbi Yossi, and Rashi cites this, in this parish on the Torah, and the halacha seems to concur with this, Moshe asked for initiated an additional day of preparation. That means that on the 4th of Sivan, he was told to prepare for the third day, the 6th of Sivan. But Moshe tells the people not to prepare l'yom ha-shlishi. He says for them to prepare l'shlosh es yomim, for 3 days, meaning day 3 is another day of preparation. And Hashem concurs with that, and didn't give the Torah until the 7th of Sivan. If that's the case, says the Magen Avraham, so we can celebrate Shavuos, but why do we call it Zman Matan Torasenu when it's ultimately a day early? And while it's true that the dates of 6th and 7th are somewhat malleable because the Farash Chodesh can be, but one can demonstrate it regardless through the days. We left Mitzrayim on a Thursday. The first day of Pesach was on a Thursday. And then Shabbos is Torah is given on a Shabbos, which is 7 and a bit weeks later. This year is a classic illustration of this question because Pesach this year fell on Thursday, as it will next year. And so we actually celebrate Pesach on this very same day of the week as the very first Pesach. And we count 7 days, and they got the Torah on Shabbos, and we had Shavuos on Friday. So it's day, we have Shavuos on day 50, but they got the Torah on day 51. But that is why the Maharsha says in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, just how crucial is the idea that we're talking about. We say that a person's preparedness to receive the Torah is, shall we say, an equal partner to the actual Torah learning. It's possible that it's the senior partner. Because we finished preparing on the 6th of Sivan, and the Torah was given on the 7th of Sivan, and every year we choose one day to celebrate, and we choose the 6th of Sivan. The Yom Tov is the day that we finish getting ready. Hashem will decide what to give, and that can be tomorrow. But the day that we celebrate is the 6th of Sivan, day 50. And that's a Chiddush. But this Chiddush, says Rav Hirsch, is highlighted by the Torah itself. That's why the Torah says, count the Omer, and then on day 50, ukurasem be'etzem ayom hazeh, on this very day, which seems overly emphatic. I mean, say the day, and that's the day. If you say be'etzem ayom hazeh, on this very day, would I have thought that it should be a different day? Yes, I really would. I would think that it's tomorrow, day 51, and the Torah says, no, it's not tomorrow, it's today. Be'etzem ayom hazeh. It's an incredible thing. On the 6th of Sivan, especially in Eretz Yisrael, where it's mamash one day, the 6th of Sivan, the day before we heard Aseres HaDibros, but we finished getting ready, Jews say to each other, Good Yom Tov, or Chag Sameach. And on the next day, the 7th of Sivan, when we heard Aseres HaDibros, they say to each other, Good morning. Or this year, Good Shabbos. And that further highlights this idea. Where do we see this additionally in action? Hashem spoke, Hashem himself directly gave us the first two of the Dibros, and the Jewish people said, we can't take it anymore. Can you, Moshe, speak to us? And Hashem said, that's correct. They were correct to say that. Heitivu asher diberu. And the Medrash explained, Heitivu is katavas aneros. What's katavas aneros got to do with the Aseres HaDibros? Says Rav Shlomo Fischer Zatzal, in the Sefer Beis Yishai, the Gaon Rav Shlomo Fischer, that when Moshe tells you the Aseres HaDibros, you get the information of the Aseres HaDibros. But when Hashem tells you the Aseres HaDibros, you get the information, but you also get the experience of being spoken to by Hashem. Moshe, if the people trust in Hashem's choice of Moshe, he can equally communicate Aseres HaDibros, but he cannot have the effect that Hashem does of speaking to them. But what is the effect of Hashem speaking to them? It gets them ready to hear the Aseres HaDibros. You know what this is like? It's exactly like Hatovas HaNeros. Hatovas HaNeros is getting the menorah ready. Hatlokas HaNeros is setting it on fire. And there is more insistence as to who gets it ready than to who sets it alight. Even a non-Kohen can light it, but only a Kohen can prepare it. There's more insistence of getting things ready correctly, and then the illumination can take place, even not by a Kohen. And that's exactly what happened in Aseres HaDibros. Moshe ultimately could take over, so to speak, from Hashem and give them the other eight Dibros. The information is the same. But what he couldn't do is prepare them and finally prepare them in the way that Hashem did, by speaking to them to the extent that they thought they would die. So when Hashem says, Eitivu asher diberu, what Hashem is saying is, setup is complete. They are ready. You couldn't do that. Only I could do that, because I'm the Kohen, and now they're ready, and now you can illuminate them and tell them the rest of the Aseres HaDibros. A wonderful biur in the Medrash there, and as we often remind ourselves, it's important to remember what Sinai was like, says Ramban, because that's what in some way it should always be like. Matan Torah is a process that continues. It's not an event that happened 3,300 years ago. It's a process that began 3,300 years ago, but whenever we learn, we're receiving more Torah, and we need to be sure that we're ready, that we're set up, that we have our Hatovas HaNeros, the all-important orientation and appreciation of words of Torah. Through that, we receive everything that the Torah has to give, as much as to the extent that we can. So we'll leave it over there for this evening. And Miss Hashem, we will meet again B'Shah Tova in a couple of weeks' time. Wish everyone the best. Rishat HaBasiris Tovas, Leklal, Leprat, and a good week. All the best.